All right, so we're diving deep into an inspector calls today.
We are.
And specifically Mr. Burling, a
Yes.
character that I think a lot of students find
Yeah.
kind of tricky to
They're good.
fully
Yeah.
wrap their heads around.
Yeah.
So we're going to look at some of his key quotes,
Yes.
and we'll look at some of the context surrounding those, and then hopefully kind of get a better picture of how Priestley is using him
Yeah.
as a construct to convey some of the bigger
Yes.
messages of the play
Yeah.
and how they can use that in their essays.
Absolutely.
One of the first things that struck me about Mr. Burling
Yeah.
is the way that Priestley describes him as heavy-looking.
Oh, absolutely.
It seems like more than just a physical description.
Definitely. And Priestley was a master of weaving symbolism into his work.
Right.
So that description of Burling as heavy could hint at the weight of his materialistic desires, his capitalist ideology,
Oh, right.
if you will, almost as if he's burdened by them. It's a really interesting way to think about it.
And then we get that great quote
Yes.
where he's making a toast to lower costs and higher prices.
Yes.
And it's,
And that's just so typical of Burling, isn't it?
it's pretty jarring.
It is.
I think that he would prioritize that over, say,
Yeah.
his daughter's happiness.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a pivotal moment in the play
Right.
because it sums up his worldview perfectly.
Yeah.
He sees everything through the lens of profit and loss, even Sheila's marriage to Gerald.
Right.
He's not just looking for a good match for his daughter, he's looking for a business deal that will benefit his company.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, I mean, was that
Yeah.
typical of all upper class marriages back then, or?
Well, that's a great question.
Yeah.
And it's where understanding the historical context becomes so important.
Okay.
So in 1912, England, marriage among the upper classes was often intertwined with business and social standing. But Burling's blatant disregard for Sheila's feelings, his reduction of her to a bargaining chip, definitely highlights the more callous aspects of that system.
So we've got this guy.
Yeah.
He's a successful businessman,
Yeah.
right? Top of his game.
Absolutely.
But then there are also all these signs
Yeah.
that he's really insecure
Yes.
about his social status.
Definitely
How do
a
we
bad fit.
reconcile those two things?
That's one of the most fascinating contradictions in his character. Priestley gives us some clues, though. Remember how his speech is described as provincial? That suggests he might come from a lower class background, something he desperately wants to hide.
So all that bragging then about being the former Lord Mayor and
Exactly.
hoping for a knighthood, that's all just
It's a smokescreen
a smokescreen.
for his insecurity. He name drops constantly trying to impress Gerald and solidify his place in upper class society.
Some
Yeah.
classic social anxiety,
Yeah.
very much a product of the rigid class system of the time.
And I guess if you're insecure about your place, you're going to be really sensitive about
Isolated.
anyone
You're going to feel threatened.
challenging that.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And it explains why he's so threatened by the inspector.
Right.
The inspector represents a challenge,
Right.
not just to Burling's actions, but to his entire worldview,
Right.
his place in the world.
Yeah. And speaking of worldview, I mean, this guy is like,
Oh, he's a poster child for capitalism.
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's like a walking, talking embodiment
Right.
of early 20th century capitalist ideology.
And that comes out in that line, a man has to make his own way, has to look after himself. And that's not
It's
just,
not just a throwaway line,
yeah.
it's the foundation of his moral code,
Right.
or lack thereof.
Yeah. And that leads directly to his treatment of Eva Smith, his refusal to accept any blame. Yes, he can't see beyond his own self-interest. Eva is just a cog in his machine, expendable, and her well-being is secondary to his profits.
And it's really striking when you contrast him with the inspector.
Oh, absolutely. It's like they're two sides of the same coin, total
They're
opposites.
what we call foils in literature, right?
No doubt.
Deliberately constructed
I'll
to.
highlight those contrasting views. So Burling is all about individual responsibility, or rather evading it, whereas the inspector champions social responsibility, the idea that we're all connected and accountable to each other.
And you can see how Priestley is using these two
Yeah.
to really hammer home
It's to create this clash of ideas.
the message of the play.
Absolutely making the audience really think about these issues.
And it's not even just the inspector.
Yeah.
I mean, his own children, Sheila and Eric.
Absolutely.
Miles apart from him.
Miles apart from him in their thinking. Yeah, and that's where the generational divide comes in.
Okay.
So Sheila and Eric, although initially complicit in the events that led to Eva's downfall,
right,
they show genuine remorse.
Okay.
And a willingness to learn from their mistakes.
Yeah.
They represent a glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
A generation that might be more open to social change.
Whereas Burling is like, digs his heels in.
Yeah.
Refuses to change.
Especially that moment when he thinks he's off the hook and is like, oh, well.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Eva Smith's dead.
That's why Priestley uses Burling as a static character.
Right.
Someone who remains unchanged.
Yeah.
Despite the events of the play.
Yeah.
He's a cautionary tale.
Okay.
A warning about the dangers of clinging to outdated beliefs.
Uh-huh.
And refusing to acknowledge the need for social responsibility.
So we've got this picture of Burling as like a,
yeah,
a hardcore capitalist.
Absolutely.
Haunted by insecurity and unable to connect with his children. And that's a recipe for disaster, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's precisely what Priestley wants us to see. He's not just presenting us with a character.
Yeah.
He's constructing a symbol of a mindset that he believes can lead to tragedy. But remember, he does it in a way that forces us to confront our own biases and assumptions,
right,
just as the characters do.
And I think that's what makes this play so powerful and so enduring.
It's not just a story. It's a challenge to the audience to think critically about their own values and the world around them.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about Burling's personality and his ideology.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious about his relationship with his wife, Sybil.
Right.
The source mentions that she's his social superior.
She is.
What's the significance of that?
Ah, that adds another layer to his insecurity, doesn't it?
Right.
Remember, he's desperately trying to climb the social ladder, marrying Sybil, who comes from a more established upper-class family, was a strategic move to elevate his own status.
Right.
It really highlights how ingrained the class system was back then.
Yeah.
Even marriage, something we often see as based on love and companionship, could be used as a tool for social advancement.
So their relationship,
even
something as personal as that, is tied into this.
It's all part of this web.
Web of social and economic power.
Social and economic power, exactly.
But do we get any sense that there's actually any genuine affection between them?
It's interesting you ask that.
Yeah.
Because the source mentions how Sybil often speaks to Burling reproachfully.
Uh-huh.
It suggests an underlying tension.
Oops.
Perhaps even a degree of disappointment on her part.
And I'm thinking about how they interact during the questioning.
Yes.
Sybil is almost dismissive.
She is a Burling. Yes, particularly when he tries to assert his authority. It's as though the cracks in their seemingly perfect upper-class facade are starting to show.
Yeah.
Priestley might be subtly hinting at the hollowness of a relationship built primarily on social ambition rather than genuine connection.
And it also makes me wonder if their dynamic reflects a broader commentary on gender roles in that era.
Absolutely.
Because Sybil, despite being from a higher social class, is still confined by those expectations of the wife's role.
Expected to support her husband.
Right.
Even when she might disagree with him.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant observation.
Yeah.
Priestley often uses his characters to explore these complex social dynamics.
Yeah.
It's not just about class.
Yeah.
It's about how those class structures intersect with gender roles and expectations.
And speaking of challenging expectations, we've got to talk about Eric.
Oh, Eric, one of the most complex characters.
Such a
complex character.
Yeah. There's this constant tension between him and Burling.
Absolutely.
Especially when it comes to their views on the workers.
The workers, exactly.
That line where he's like, why shouldn't they try for higher wages?
Yes, that moment speaks volumes
about
the generational divide that Priestley is portraying.
Okay.
So Eric, despite his flaws,
shows
a level of empathy and social conscience that Burling simply doesn't possess.
Right.
He can see the injustice of the system, the plight of the workers,
while
his father remains blind to it.
But Eric's not exactly a saint.
Oh, no, he's not.
Right.
He's a very complex character.
Yeah, his involvement with Eva.
Yes.
His drinking problems.
His drinking problems.
Like, it all adds to that complexity.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Priestley doesn't give us easy answers
Right.
or neatly categorized characters.
Right.
Eric is a mess of contradictions.
Yeah.
Capable of both compassion and terrible actions.
Yeah.
He's a product of his upbringing, but also an individual grappling with his own demons.
It makes me think that Priestley's maybe suggesting that real change can't just come from one generation.
That's a powerful interpretation.
Yeah.
And it ties into the idea of the characters as constructs.
Right.
So Priestley isn't just creating individuals. He's crafting representatives of different social groups, different perspectives to create this complex and ultimately thought-provoking narrative.
Okay. So we've got Burling representing this kind of entrenched capitalist ideology.
Yes.
We've got Sheila and Eric representing a more...
A more socially conscious generation.
Yeah, exactly. But what about the inspector?
Ah, the inspector.
He seems to exist almost outside of this.
Of the typical social hierarchy.
Yeah.
The inspector is one of the most fascinating and debated characters in literature.
Right.
Some argue he's a supernatural figure.
Right.
A kind of moral reckoning personified.
Uh-huh.
Others see him as a symbol of social conscience.
Okay.
A voice for the voiceless.
And I think what I find so interesting is that it's his presence that really kind of exposes the hypocrisy and the flaws.
Yes, for self-reflection.
Everyone in the family.
Forcing them to confront their actions.
Yeah.
And their responsibility.
And his most potent weapon is the truth.
Absolutely.
Right.
He systematically unravels their carefully constructed facades.
Right.
Revealing the ugly reality beneath their wealth and social standing.
I keep thinking about that line.
Yes.
We are members of one body.
Yes.
It's like such a direct...
That's a key moment in the play.
Yeah.
So the inspector is articulating a philosophy of interconnectedness.
Okay.
A belief that our actions have consequences.
Right.
That ripple outwards, impacting others in ways we might not even realize.
And it's something that Burt Allen, with his very narrow focus on...
On profit.
Profit and self-preservation, just can't grasp.
He can't grasp it.
Yeah.
He's so caught up in his own world.
Right.
His own anxieties, that he fails to see the bigger picture.
And that's maybe Priestley's ultimate point.
Which is perhaps Priestley's ultimate point.
Right.
Burling isn't just a bad guy.
Right.
He's a cautionary tale about the dangers of unchecked greed, social climbing, and a lack of compassion.
But it's interesting because while he's clearly the antagonist, there's also something.
There is. He's not entirely unsympathetic, is he?
Yeah.
He's a product of his time,
right,
shaped by the social and economic forces of his era.
And Priestley uses that masterfully.
Exactly.
To create a character who's both reprehensible.
Yes. And in a strange way, pitiable.
Pitiable.
He's trapped by his own limitations.
Yeah.
Unable to break free from the mindset that ultimately leads to his downfall.
I'm thinking about all those seemingly throwaway lines.
Yes.
Where he's boasting about his business acumen.
Yeah.
We're making predictions
about
the future.
And they're almost comical in how wrong they turn out to be.
Yeah. And that's Priestley using dramatic irony.
That's Priestley using dramatic irony to brilliant effect.
To brilliant effect.
By making Burling look foolish.
Right.
He undermines his authority and encourages the audience to question everything he represents.
It's like he's saying, don't just believe everything you hear.
Think for yourselves.
Especially from those in power.
Consider the evidence.
Yeah.
Question the status quo.
And it's not even just about challenging authority.
It's about recognizing
our
own potential for blindness.
Recognizing our own
self-deception.
Right. Blind spots.
Could we, under different circumstances, fall prey to the same flaws as Burling?
That's a really...
It makes you think.
Thought-provoking question.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Is he really that different from us?
Yeah.
Or?
Do we all harbor those seeds of greed?
Yeah. Do we all have that potential?
And self-preservation within us.
Within us. Yeah.
And that's precisely why An Inspector Calls remains so relevant today.
Right.
It's not just a period piece. It's a timeless exploration of human nature.
Right.
Of the choices we make and the consequences that ripple outwards, shaping the world we live in.
So we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
From Burling's capitalist ideology to his complex relationships with his family and the inspector.
Absolutely.
What's the one key takeaway
okay.
that you want listeners to remember?
I think it's this.
Okay.
Mr. Burling is more than just a character.
Mm-hmm.
He's a carefully crafted construct.
Talk.
A symbol of a particular mindset
right.
that Priestley wants us to examine, to critique,
yeah.
and ultimately to learn from.
And that's what makes it so powerful.
And that's what makes this play so powerful. It's
yeah.
not just a story.
Right.
It's a call to action,
mm-hmm.
a challenge to each of us to become more aware, more compassionate,
right.
and more responsible for the world we create together.
Absolutely.
And it really highlights how ingrained that class system was.
Mm.
You know, back then, even marriage, something we often see as based on love
right.
and companionship, you know, right. could be used as a tool
yeah.
for social advancement.
So their relationship,
yeah.
even something as personal as that,
mm-hmm.
is tied into this.
It's all part of this web.
Web of social and economic power.
Of social and economic power, exactly.
But do we get any sense that there's actually yeah. any genuine affection between them?
It's interesting you ask that
yeah.
because the source mentions how Sybil often speaks to Burling reproachfully.
Uh-huh.
It suggests an underlying tension, perhaps yeah. even a degree of disappointment on her part.
And I'm thinking about
yeah.
how they interact
mm-hmm.
during the questioning.
Yes.
Sybil is almost dismissive.
She is.
Of Burling.
Yes, particularly when he tries to assert his authority. It's as though the cracks in their seemingly perfect upper-class facade
mm-hmm.
are starting to show.
Yeah.
Priestley might be subtly hinting at the hollowness
right.
of a relationship built primarily on social ambition
okay.
rather than genuine connection.
And it also makes me wonder if their dynamic
yes.
reflects a broader commentary
mm-hmm.
on gender roles in that era.
Absolutely.
Because Sybil, despite being from a higher social class,
yes.
is still confined by those expectations
exactly.
of the wife's role.
Expected to support her husband.
Right.
Even when she might disagree with him.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant observation.
Yeah.
Priestley often uses his characters
right.
to explore these complex social dynamics.
Yeah.
It's not just about class.
Yeah.
It's about how those class structures intersect with gender roles
right.
and expectations.
And speaking of challenging expectations.
Yes.
We've got to talk about Eric.
Oh, Eric, one of the most complex characters.
Such a
complex character.
Yeah. There's this constant tension
yeah.
between him and Burling.
Absolutely.
Especially when it comes to their views
yes.
on the workers.
The workers, exactly.
That line where he's like,
yes.
why shouldn't they try for higher wages?
Yes, that moment speaks volumes
right.
about the generational divide that Priestley is portraying.
Okay.
So Eric, despite his flaws,
yeah.
shows a level of empathy
mm-hmm.
and social conscience that Burling simply doesn't possess.
Right.
He can see the injustice of the system, the mm-hmm. plight of the workers,
right.
while his father remains blind to it.
But Eric's not exactly a saint.
Oh, no, he's not.
Right.
He's a very complex character.
Yeah, his involvement with Eva.
Yes.
His drinking problem.
His drinking problems.
Like, yeah, it all adds to that complexity.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Priestley doesn't give us easy answers
right.
or neatly categorized characters.
Right.
Eric is a mess of contradictions.
Yeah.
Capable of both compassion
uh-huh.
and terrible actions.
Yeah.
He's a product of his upbringing,
mm-hmm.
but also an individual grappling with his own demons.
It makes me think that Priestley's maybe suggesting that
yeah.
real change
mm-hmm.
can't just come from one generation.
That's a powerful interpretation.
Yeah.
And it ties into the idea of the characters as constructs.
Right.
So Priestley isn't just creating individuals.
Mm-hmm.
He's crafting representatives
right.
of different social groups, different perspectives
right.
to create this complex and ultimately thought-provoking narrative.
Okay. So we've got Burling representing this kind of
yeah.
entrenched capitalist ideology.
Yes.
We've got Sheila and Eric representing
a more socially conscious generation.
Yeah, exactly. But what about the inspector?
Ah, the inspector.
He seems to exist almost outside.
He does of the typical social hierarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating how Priestley manages to make him, you know, both reprehensible but also strangely relatable.
Yeah.
At the same time.
He's clearly in the wrong, but I do feel like there's something about...
There is.
That vulnerability.
His vulnerability.
That kind of desperation.
Yeah.
To be seen as successful and important.
Yeah.
Makes him almost...
It's those little details that Priestley throws in, you know?
Yeah.
Like his obsession with being knighted.
Right.
Or those awkward attempts to impress Gerald.
Right.
He's trying so hard to fit in.
Yeah.
To prove his worth.
Yeah.
That he ends up alienating the people closest to him.
And it all stems from that...
Yeah.
Deep-seated insecurity.
Absolutely.
A feeling that he's not good enough.
it drives him to make these terrible choices.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's a prisoner of his own anxieties.
Right.
Constantly striving for something that ultimately won't bring him happiness.
Right.
And that's where the tragedy of his character lies.
Yeah. It's like he's chasing a ghost.
This idea of success and social status.
Yeah. Success and social status.
Yeah.
Without
realizing that true fulfillment comes from something much deeper.
Right.
Something more meaningful.
And that's really the message, I think, that...
That's the message Priestley's trying to convey, isn't it?
Yeah.
Material wealth and social climbing are empty pursuits.
Right.
If they come at the expense of human connection and compassion.
It makes you wonder, do you think he could ever really change?
That's a good question.
Like, could he ever really break free from those chains of insecurity?
That's the question Priestley leaves us with, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can people like Burling, so entrenched in their ways of thinking, ever truly transform?
Right.
Or are they destined to repeat the same mistakes?
Yeah.
Blind to the suffering they cause?
Yeah, it's a
tough question.
Really tough question. And I don't know that I have the answer to that.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth thinking about.
It is.
Because maybe by understanding Burling,
yeah,
seeing the forces that shaped him, and the consequences of his choices,
yeah,
we can maybe avoid...
Maybe we can learn from his mistakes.
Falling into those same traps ourselves.
And that's the power of great literature, isn't it?
Yeah.
It holds up a mirror to society.
Right.
Forces us to confront uncomfortable truths
about
ourselves and the world we live in.
Right.
It challenges us to think critically,
yeah,
to empathize with others, and to strive for something better.
So for all of you out there listening,
yeah,
grappling with Mr. Burling.
Yeah.
In your essays.
He's more than just a grumpy old capitalist.
Yeah, remember, he's more than just a grumpy old capitalist.
He's a carefully constructed symbol.
Right.
A warning sign.
Yeah.
And a challenge to each of us to do better.
Yeah.
To be better.
We hope this deep dive has given you some fresh insights.
Yeah, some food for thought.
Into this really complex character.
Absolutely.
And helped you appreciate the depth and complexity.
Yes.
Of Priestley's masterpiece.
It's a brilliant play.
Keep exploring.
Keep questioning.
Keep questioning and keep those aha moments coming.
And good luck with those essays.
Good luck with those essays.